0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on another lively weekend across Scottish football. Celtic take another step towards the title with a flying start at Kilmarnock. That's after Rangers had done their bit against St Mirren. Edinburgh bragging rights go to Hibs with huge wins for Dundee United and Livy. And another manager bites the dust as Callum Davidson leaves St Johnston. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me this evening you have Kenny Miller and Roger Hanna.
And it was the weekend, Gordon, when the casualty rate among SPFL managers hit 20 for the season, and the role of caretaker boss had never been more trendy. As you see, Callum Davidson gone from St Johnston, leaving Stephen McLean as caretaker. The Hearts caretaker Stephen Naismith lost the Edinburgh derby on his dugout debut. The Aberdeen caretaker Barry Robson made it 6 wins in a row to seize control of third. And the Dundee United caretaker Jim Goodwin hauled them out of the drop zone. I just hope Clyde One don't take note of this and start drafting in caretaker pundits.
Oh, let's hope not, Roger. Yeah, it was goals aplenty with the Old Firm at the weekend. Nothing changed at the top of the table. Things a lot changed at the bottom of the table. So it's all to play for as we move closer to the split.
0141 951 1025. That is the number you need. So come on down and let us know what is on your mind. If we start yesterday, Celtic fans, I suspect you thought you were on for an absolute cricket score at one point. I suspect you Kilmarnock fans thought the same. It didn't quite pan out that way. But what did you take away? Another 4 goals scored, another 3 points, another step towards the title. What did you make of the game? The talking points. Derek McInnes had a bit of a grumble, didn't he? Phil O should have been sent off. You're getting a bit more of a look at guys like Iwata, Kobayashi. Are they starting to impress you? And where did it go wrong at the beginning for you Kilmarnock fans? So that's yesterday. Back to Saturday, where to start? Rangers fans, I think we had someone on that left at 2-2, did we not, on Saturday? So maybe I've heard of a game of two halves, but this was quite the ending to that one. So Rangers fans, what did you think of it? How happy are you to win so convincingly in the end? Todd Cantwell, he seems to be getting rave reviews. Michael Beale says that it was a horror show at the back, though. Is that something that concerns you with a semi-final looming large? St Johnston fans, if you're out there, was that the right call to get rid of Callum Davidson? A very, very successful time at the club. Was it the right time to part ways? Hearts fans, what's happening there? And we even had a title won at the weekend, Roger Hanna.
We did. Dunfermline Athletic, congratulations to them. The League One title in the bag. What a way to seal it. 5-0 against the Palmerston Pep at East End Park. I haven't seen Stephen Mill this happy since the last time you and Cameron phoned in sick.
Yeah, we're actually going to be joined by James McPaik a bit later on as well. So it's 0141 951 1025. Monday night, no excuses, because there is a list of talking points as long as your arm. But I want to discuss them with you. As much as I like Roger and Kenny, I'd like to discuss them with you. So pick up the phone. Right, result of the weekend, Kenny, what are you giving us?
I'm going to go for that result. That Dunfermline 5-0. I mean, some teams fall over the line, but this was Dunfermline absolutely powering over the line, the League One title. So 5-0 for me, and congratulations to James and everybody connected with Dunfermline.
See, who says we only focus on Glasgow in the Premiership? Roger Hanna.
Well, I don't want to add to your personal grief, so I won't pick Dundee United.
Seriously?
For part, I'm going to go for Hibernian.
Wow, I'd have picked Dundee United for what it's worth.
Well, listen, it's a big win for Jim, I'll say that. But I think just for Hibs, the first Edinburgh derby win in 10 games. They had lost the previous 4 games. All the talk in the build-up to the derby was Hearts with a new caretaker manager in Stephen Naismith. They were ruling the roost over Hibs in the capital. And Hibs stood up for once. They didn't Hibs it. And they got the win on the second half through Kevin Nisbet, his first derby goal, and a big goal for Lee Johnson.
Okay, what are we going for goal of the weekend? I felt like you had some good options when I watched the highlights, I must say.
Well, there were some really good options at Ibrox. I mean, O'Hara's too were actually really good. But I'm going to go for Scotty Arfield's in the 60 pass move. It was absolutely sensational stuff. And to finish off that run for Cantwell, and then the no-look pass, and Scotty Arfield doing what he does, getting beyond that striker, and a comfortable finish through the keeper's legs. Excellent goal.
Yeah, 60 passes is quite something. Roger, what are you going for?
Same game. I was with Kenny Ibrox on Saturday. The Cantwell performance and the way he set up Arfield for the goal was terrific. I'm going to go for Mark O'Hara.
Great, wasn't it?
His first one of the two. He is St Mirren's top scorer. He is rated at £1 million by his manager, Stephen Robinson. He is having the season of his life, and he could crown it this weekend against his old team, Kilmarnock, if St Mirren get the point to get into the top six for the first time since the split was invented.
Howler of the weekend.
I'm sorry, Fraser, but it has to be Fraser Murray of Kilmarnock.
One of those days, I think they call it.
It was a bad day at the office. Good player, but we've all had them. Made a bad mistake with a pass straight to Kyogo for the opening goal.
His colleagues maybe didn't help him out, to be fair.
Well, yeah. He didn't help himself with a clearance for, I think it was Celtic's, was losing count by that stage. I think it was the third goal. Mm-hmm. Hooked after half an hour or so. It's a day he will want to forget. Hopefully he'll bounce back quickly.
And I'll go for Hearts general form. Six straight defeats. Wheels have fell off a little bit. Listen, it's nothing to do with my old teammate Naismith. Obviously, five of these defeats he wasn't involved in. But a team of that size, with the squad that they've got, with the aspirations that they've got, looking to finish third in the league, six straight defeats is really, really poor for a club like Hearts.
Yeah, 5 points off third now. And man of the weekend, top performer, who gets the accolade?
I'm going for Cantwell. I think his performances are getting better as each week passes. He's becoming increasingly influential in the games as well. He scored a goal, really good goal. That was another really good move for Rangers as well. And then the run to set up the goal of the weekend for me, Arfield, was just absolutely incredible. Patience, then as a real drive right at the heart of the team, with balance, poise, and then just the composure at the end to slide Arfield through. It was wonderful.
I'm going to go for Matt O'Reilly. Celtic midfielders just seem to take turns this season at turning up when they're required. Rio Hatate missing at the weekend. Aaron Moy was one of a few players that got rested. He's just coming back from injury. And O'Reilly stepped forward slightly in front of Callum McGregor and Tomoki Iwata. Two goals, two good finishes, a big performance. And now it might take something from a Moy or a Hatate to get O'Reilly back out of the team.
01419511025. What are you thinking after the weekend then? If it is that game that Roger is referring to, Celtic fans, how good was the first half performance? Where does that rank this season? We always talk about difficult pitch and all that sort of stuff. So how pleased were you? What about some of the guys you got to see? Iwata again from the start, Kobayashi, did they catch the eye? You can let us know all of your thoughts. Kelly fans, are you feeling aggrieved? I know your manager was, felt Celtic should have been down to 10 men, albeit I think they had racked up a few goals by that point. How are you feeling about the battle at the bottom after yesterday? And of course, Saturday, Rangers fans, was it a horror show in defence? Are you more concerned about the positives and the 5 goals scored? There is a lot to get through, so please do pick up that phone. 0141 951 1025. Gary is a Celtic fan, to kick things off. How did you view Celtic's performance yesterday, Gary? Oh, it got off to a ropey start and then disappeared altogether. Gary's on a bit of a bad line. I think he said it was amazing for what it's worth. I think I heard that. No?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was.
Either
I was
that or actually, he's in the bath under the water.
I was impressed with Iwata and Kobayashi, to be honest. I thought Iwata was excellent. Kobayashi done great in that left centre back role. Gives him a good balance on that side. Two really, really strong performances.
Roger, I think it was amazing. It was blah, 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 something like that.
Well, Gary seemed very happy. His start was almost as bad as Kilmarnock's start, I would say, yesterday. Celtic just steamrolled over the top of them. I wondered at the stage, you know, when it was it 27 minutes in, they'd scored four and missed a penalty.
I know.
If you're a Kilmarnock fan at that stage, all you're thinking mm-hmm. about is Dundee United 0, Celtic 9. Mm-hmm. All the hallmarks of that game early season at Tannadice that cost Jack Ross his job. Pretty sure Derek McInnes would be thinking like that at that stage. But whether Celtic took the foot off the pedal, whether Kilmarnock's substitutions made a difference, you can argue either way. Mm-hmm. But they were very, very impressive in that opening half hour.
You know, don't take this the wrong way, but I spent the early part of my afternoon thinking about a Kilmarnock fan that I had met in the jacuzzi in the morning. Right, and I will explain, just in case you cast any aspersions. I met a Kilmarnock fan who said he would take 3-0. And I thought, you know, that's that sort of typical doomsday scenario. And my goodness, I thought this guy will be tearing his hair out, because it was 3, you say the penalty. It felt like it was going to be an absolute cricket score, didn't it?
It did, and you know, Derek McInnes clearly saw that. When you're making two substitutions after half an hour or so, you know that plan A has gone horribly wrong. You wonder now, you know, you think back, that 9-0 really hurt Dundee United. The manager left, and it's really only taken them to this spell of the season now to find any sort of form. I know it wasn't nine, but just the manner of that first half hour, you wonder how that's going to affect Kilmarnock over these last six games of the season when they're in a relegation dogfight.
Right, I think we've got Gary back. Gary, it was a bit of a false start. What were you saying about Celtic's performance?
I thought they were sensational in the first half. It's the best I've seen them play in years. They were fantastic, really sensational, honestly.
It's funny because I spoke to Derek McInnes earlier in the week, Kenny, and he said he wanted to stress the importance of striking first, because it can put the doubt in the mind, it can give you something to hang on to. The problem is, we've actually seen with this Celtic team, it doesn't even necessarily matter, they had to come behind a couple of weeks there, but you would rather it, to state the obvious, you would rather that than the way it went for Kilmarnock. How much of that was down to Celtic flying out the traps? Because we always hear that, you know, the pitch is really difficult and it can be tough to go, but that's 5-0 and 4-1 they've, you know, won there this season.
Yeah, well, they're kind of putting that to like to rest now with the two results and that 27 minutes. It was, I mean, Gary's right, it was sensational, and it could have been more. You know, you talk about the penalty miss, but the pressure that was put on their goal, the way they were dominating, it was a top performance. I mean, again, looking at the way Ange is, I mean, I think he would have wanted a better second half.
Probably.
Because they were a bit sloppy. I think when the goal went in, it kind of never affected them, I wouldn't say, but they were sloppy in the second half. Whether that was down to the way Dell kind of set his team up, because I did think they tried to get pressure on that ball a little bit higher up, with a few tweaks that he made, maybe at half time, but it was an incredible performance. And the game's done. You know, the game's done at that point, and it's on to the next one. They also had the luxury of resting your Callum McGregors, your Kyogos, and keeping
them. Jota and Carter Vickers
and
didn't even
Carter
play
Vickers
did
as well.
Did you ever smile at Kyogo when you missed a penalty?
No, never ever. It would be definitely head and hands and wondering what the manager was going to give you. But no, he's
you've got a few goal cushion. It helps, doesn't it?
It helps when you're on 29 goals as well. So it could have been his 30th, to be honest. But I'm
and
sure
he's
he'll 50th get that
for the club.
I'm sure he'll get that in the coming weeks.
Even that opening goal that sets the tone, Roger. It's yes, it's a dreadful mistake. But Kyogo's still got an awful lot to do, doesn't he? Even the touch to sort of, it seems quite deliberate to sort of spin it round the defender and, you know, take it where exactly he wants it to go. Then he's at the angle. He's just in one of those runs just now, isn't he, where everything he's touching is working. Apart from the penalty.
And listen, we can say Kilmarnock were poor, but Celtic were good. You know, and you look at Celtic in that opening spell. Ange Postecoglou said himself, it's as good as they've played this season, that spell in the first half. Kyogo did have a lot of work to do. Maeda had a bit of work to do with that header to get in as well. And O'Reilly's two finishes were excellent. You know, he had a very, very good game. And
did he not have to wait for his first goal of the season until a couple of weeks ago? And now he's.
And also, what
about
Kyogo? The sprint back to get back to, is it Deutsch where he was tracking back? Like he's running past teammates just to get back and defend and nick the ball off, and then he gets himself back up to be part of the next attack. I mean, it's an incredible work ethic that he's got and he's bringing to that team as well. It's not just his goals.
Yeah, I mean, Gary, everybody knows what Kyogo can do and Callum McGregor and all the rest of it. Maybe getting a bit more familiar with the likes of Iwata, Kobayashi, did you see anything you liked in them?
It was nice to see the new players getting a chance, and they all showed up in the first half. The second half, I think they took their foot off the gas a wee bit, and obviously Kilmarnock tried harder to limit things and maybe attack a bit better.
Gary, we're also pleased to see, I know we speak about Iwata and Haksabanovic came back in as well, and Kobayashi. As a supporter, you're pleased to see the likes of Rocco Vatta and Ben Summers getting on, so you can see the fruits of the work up at Lennoxtown.
Absolutely, absolutely. The more that's why Celtic are so successful, because they develop their own players and they look after the players that they have, and they're very good with their transfer market stuff. Something that Rangers are absolutely pathetic at. You know, I mean, the sell by clauses, they just don't exist at Ibrox. You know what I mean?
It's always good to just get any boot in at the
just
same time.
That's
fine.
In,
yeah, that's Glasgow.
Potentially a couple of big hitters leaving for free in the summer.
That's Glasgow. And to be fair, the academy graduates into Celtic's first team haven't probably been good enough recently, Roger. But it's hard to care too much when you're winning leagues and all that stuff. You know, that tends to come a bit late. It's important, but you know what I mean. It becomes a subplot.
It's always interesting to see them coming through. You know, Rangers, mainly because of the injury list, had the likes of Aaron Lyle, Billy Rice, Ross McCausland in the bench at the weekend. They didn't get on, but they were there. And I do think, you know, Old Firm supporters, yes, they like all the fancy imported superstars, but they also have a place in their hearts for homegrown players. You know, they, look at you know, Callum McGregor, Kieran Tierney, James Forrest at Celtic, the fondness that's attached to them. And I think if Rangers and Celtic can bring through more of their own, you know, there's an attachment with the supporter base.
Did you see anything in, I mean, it's very early on and you're judging them against a team that's winning everything, but see anything in Kobayashi and Iwata to think that, that they really could force themselves into, I don't know, semi-final plans or cup final plans when that day comes, or even just the starting 11 in the near future?
I don't think so if everybody's fit. I just think they're quite set in those areas. Their chances may come if people move on. I did like Kobayashi on that left
is
side.
Is he a bit different in terms of the way he
I think
uses
he was
the ball?
Really, he was really comfortable. He gives you... I think Stafford looks uncomfortable. I'm not saying he's no great on the ball, but he looks uncomfortable. He's on that side as well. He's no left footed. I think Kobayashi gave them a good bit of balance. I mean, there's that one in the first half that he played with outside his left foot to send, I think it might have been Maeda through. He's got good ability. Seems really, really calm on the ball. He's different. He is different. I can't see him shifting Stafford in this season, to be honest with you. So it might take somebody to move, and the same goes for Iwata. He's going to have to move O'Reilly's, Moyes, McGregor's, Hatate when he comes back. But he looked very good again.
I saw 45 minutes of Kobayashi at Tynecastle in the Scottish Cup time, and Starfield went off with an injury, and looks lovely in the ball, looks really composed, can hit a pass, as Kenny said. The one thing I think that would work against probably him and Iwata in terms of selection for the semi-final is they haven't been, you know, they haven't been asked to defend really in any of those games.
I just think they wouldn't get the nod anyway, Roger, based on like if you're picking Celtic's team, you know, you could
I probably phrased it wrong. I was thinking slightly more longer. For instance, could this be the start of maybe seeing Kobayashi at the beginning of next season?
Yeah, possibly.
Is that, is that possible?
Possibly for, the two of them,
Thank you to Gary. What about Bill, who's a Celtic fan? What did you take away from yesterday, Bill?
I thought the team played as well as I've seen them playing for many a year. And I think up to the point where Kyogo missed the penalty, I think had that gone in and they'd continued in the same vein, they could well have had a score similar to Dundee United. But I think the big problem is the way they fell out of the game in the second half may cause problems once we get into Europe. I don't think we can afford to fall out of the game like that. And I've watched a couple of players playing. One of them was the Ghent server centre-forward, Orbana. I thought he was absolutely immense playing against West Ham. His ability to hold the ball and allow his teammates to come up and support him. And he was also a tremendous finisher. I also like to look at the centre-half they had, Ikumu. I think he won 95% of all the tackles he went in for and blocks that he made. And I think in Europe, we need to have somebody that will hold the ball up, allow the other players into the game, not give the ball away and be difficult to push off, and a defender who just doesn't let anything pass them.
I love this from Bill's on a scouting mission. If you're listening, Peter Lowell, give Bill a phone. Well, and make sure he gets a cut of any future transfers.
If you are listening, Peter, whatever you do, don't Google Gift Orban's price tag because you'll pass out. I think, listen, he's a very good player, Bill, you're right, but I think probably his next move is going to be out again to the English Premier League, the German Bundesliga. He scored a hat-trick inside 4 minutes and won against games in an earlier round before they took on West Ham. He's one of the most highly rated young strikers in the continent, and he's probably, his market value at the minute is probably more than any of the current Celtic players. And you know how, I don't need to tell you how good this Celtic team is performing at the minute. So it's probably the, you know, a move like that probably just beyond Celtic at the minute, but certainly a very good player.
Yeah, I can't believe he's just shattered that one already for you.
They just have to do with Kyogo, they're up front, won't they?
Yeah, I guess. Aye. All got more game time than he usually does. Jurgen Klinsmann at Rugby Park. Things you never thought you would see there, the South Korea manager.
I was dying to see Jurgen Klinsmann with a Kelly pie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say do the Klinsmann slide on that Astro third degree burns. Here's your fire service up to help him out. But my point was Celtic will hope that is that guy that holds people, holds the ball up more than Kyogo does, brings people in, becomes your different option.
I think he's looked okay. I didn't think he was great yesterday, and maybe that's because his national team manager's in there, somebody like Jurgen Klinsmann there. I didn't think he was great yesterday, doing things not as good as what I've seen him in the previous games. But listen, I think he's potential to go on and be a really, really good player for Celtic. But again, he's got to dislodge Kyogo with the way they play. There's one striker that plays up front. And so it's he's got a big job on his hands to move Kyogo out of the team.
You're right, because I mean, I've seen him. I thought he's a good player. I thought that was his worst performance. Absolutely. In a Celtic shirt. Yep. And listen, it might have nothing to do with Jurgen Klinsmann being near it, but
maybe due to the pitch. It might be due to the fact they were 4-0 and then they were
I think they were 4-1 up and the foot had taken off the pedal a little bit. But no, he does offer something different from Kyogo, and I think that's probably why he was signed, you know, just in case you want to try something different out. A plan B.
Thank you very much to Bill. It's 01419511025. Celtic fans, Kelly fans, if you want to keep going, please do. Rangers fans, keen to hear from you. On one hand, Michael Beale says the defending was a horror show, but on the other, he scored 5, and you haven't done that for quite some time in the Scottish Premiership. So get in touch.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Kenny Miller are here at 01419511025, and we're talking as much as we can from the weekend because there is quite a bit to get through. Charles is a Celtic fan. What did you make of yesterday, Charles?
Well, I thought the game was it was a good game for 25 minutes or so, wasn't it? And then it just flattens right off. It was rubbish after that. I don't know. I don't know what happened. The pace just seemed to leave in the second half, and Haksabanovic come on. Come on. I know he made the change to let Jurgen Klinsmann see him, but I can't resolve by the by. It was going to change in the second half, but the first half annoyed me. I'll tell you why I phoned in. What I really phoned in for was Furuhashi. Wee Kyogo's Furuhashi. I know he's a legend. The guy's talented. What a footballer, etc. And it brings a lot of joy to the team. It brings a lot of kind of smiles and all that to our proceedings. But when he was taking the penalty kick, what annoyed me about him was he was taking the penalty kick. It didn't look like he was taking it serious. He seemed to be. That's a better way of putting it. He just wasn't being serious about it. It was like it was a game or a bit of fun to him, you know what I mean? And to me, he should have been get his game face on at that point. I think the big answer should go through him because he can't be. It could have been for a place in the final. He can't be doing that, you know what I mean? He can't be, and it was. I'm not saying he was. I'm not saying he's been disrespectful to Kilmarnock, but he just didn't seem to be taking it serious. You know, it's maybe the culture, but I've noticed that in a few other challenges, a few other games, he's far too apologetic and far too nice. And I think we man needs a bit of steel about him. I think we get taken a lot more serious as a serious footballer if he toughens up a wee bit.
Who's not taking him serious as a serious footballer, Charles, where he's on 29 goals for the season? And
I apologise, you may have heard me wrong there. I'm saying that I don't think that he was taking
it serious. He should take it serious. I mean, Roger, like, because he has a wee smile on his face, are you as angry about it as Charles is?
If you're going to be criticised, I think criticised as being far too nice is probably the best kind of criticism you can get. Kyogo this season has gone to another level. There was a lot of times in the show a year ago that people were suggesting that Giakoumakis should be Celtic's number one striker and Kyogo should only really be the backup. And you fast forward now, and you can't really imagine a Celtic team without Kyogo. 29 goals this season, 49 in his 2 seasons for the club. He'll probably get my vote. In fact, he will get my vote for Footballer of the Year this season.
You're exclusive.
And, you know, the way Ange Postecoglou spoke about him, I think it was last week or the week before, just saying that when he got the Celtic job, Kyogo was the one he wanted above all others. He had faced him in the J-League. He knew the threat he posed, and I don't think it will bother Ange too much if Kyogo comes in smiling to his work or laughing to his work. As long as he keeps scoring 29 goals a season, he can get on with it.
And he has also talked to Ange about how much he wants to win and his desire to do it. Listen, he just does it with a smile on his face. He's clearly loving life at Celtic. He's scored, and why would he not? He's playing in a wonderful team. He's got great teammates about him that provide incredible amounts of chances for him every week. Every striker's dream, and he's going to go on for probably 35 goal plus season.
I mean, as Kenny said earlier, Charles, look at the way he tracked back in that one incident in the game, the effort he puts in. He does get his goal. It's not exactly a guy that's not taking it seriously, is it?
I'm not for one second saying a guy doesn't put an effort, especially when it comes to running, etc. The guy's a legend. What a footballer he is. I'm not putting him down for his ability, but his attitude there at that time and certain other times, he needs to get a wee bit of steel. And then as far as the point to come back to you on where you're saying that he's good enough. Sorry if he's bringing a wee bit of heartiness there, and he is. But remember, we never stop. We always want to keep getting better, and you can always keep getting better. If there's any way you can get better, you know, he'd lost focus. In my mind, he'd lost focus before he was taking that penalty kick. There was no focus. He didn't have his game face on, eyes on the prize, looking at too much other things. Look at the goal, look at the ball, put the ball in the net. That's what he should have been doing at that point there. He should have been getting professional there. You're already having a laugh and a joke after the game.
He's not unprofessional though, Charles, is he? Because he's half a post width away from scoring the penalty.
Well, exactly. Well, and that's what it takes. I'm just as good as a mile.
Somebody does need to tell Kyogo that there is no room for happiness and joy anywhere in Scottish football, and that players are much more appreciated if they're dripping with hate and resentment. That's what I've taken from this.
Well, had he scored the penalty, he would have been the quickest Celtic striker to 50 goals since Charlie Nicholas 40 years ago. That gives you an indication of the impact that Kyogo has made in Scottish football. Yes, he will extend a hand and help pick up a fallen opponent. Yes, he will have a smile on his face at moments that maybe Charles thinks he should have his game face on. But I think that's just Kyogo. That's just the type of person he is. He seems to be happy at his work, and at his work, Celtic are getting the best out of him.
Charles, Derek McInnes felt O should have been sent off. Do you agree?
The high boot, 50-50 on that one. It was, put us away if they sent him off, you wouldn't have argued. 50-50.
Okay, thank you to Charles. Let's hear from both managers, starting with the home boss.
Everything you want against Celtic wasn't there, a strong start. We played the part in the downfall, really, our own part in that, in terms of the cheapness of the goals. I think from there on in, we lost all way. We thought it was a 20-minute period, it was like a car crash, just watching it and unfold. I thought we were a better team second half in terms of chances created and showing a bit more personality, but it was a Kamalik team I wanted to see from the start, not really from 30 minutes in. That 20-minute period was so difficult for everybody to watch from a Kamalik perspective.
Look, I thought the first half was outstanding. It's the best football as we played all year in terms of, you know, the way we moved the ball, the way we moved ourselves, you know, on the pitch. And, you know, after last week, a big win, obviously you're kind of looking at where the boys' focus is. But I thought it was important we started with a real good intent today, and I think they did that. And it is important because, you know, in a perfect world, you design your team to be playing its best football at the most important part. That's not discounting the fact that you've got to be in this position to start with. So we've had to be pretty strong all year. But, you know, this is the time of the year where things get decided and you want to be playing your best football. And like I said, I thought the attitude of the lads today was first rate. It's not an easy pitch to play on. You know, difficult opponent who are obviously desperate for points. So, you know, you can kind of just come here and try and get 3 points and move on. But we came here with the intent to play our football.
Granted, it wasn't in that specific clip there. Derek McInnes, though, very unhappy that O wasn't sent off. Roger, what was your view on that incident?
Technically, he didn't say he was unhappy that O should have been sent off. He was unhappy at the inconsistency because Kyle Vassell was sent off for a very similar challenge against Hibs at Easter Road, lost his appeal and missed the next game. So he was just asking for consistency. I think he said, I don't want to see O sent off, but I didn't want to see Kyle Vassell sent off at Easter Road either. So it's another one of these VAR inconsistency complaints from a manager.
What about this incident in isolation then?
I wasn't convinced,
Kenny.
Listen, the foot's above the head, you know, so it could be looked upon as you're endangering an opponent. But they never made any contact with the guy. So again, I don't like to see players, because he's not went in to hurt someone there. He's put his foot up to try and make contact with the ball. But let's be honest, his foot is way above the player's head. So you know, maybe a 50-50 is right. Again, if you get it, then you're fair enough. But what Dale's obviously talking about is the inconsistencies.
I think most people thought the Vassell one was a nonsense, don't they? So I always say this, we can't have it both ways. If that one's a nonsense, you don't then use that as your barometer of what it should look like.
Yeah, but
it's just weird logic.
Yeah, I understand that logic, but you can also see where Derek McInnes is coming
from.
Oh,
you would. You could tell Kyle Vassell's body, like he runs up to the ref and he's almost trying to get across that I got sent off or something similar.
I mean, the good thing is it's no affected result.
Exactly.
You know, it's not been a really tight game and it could have cost them or could have given them an advantage. You know, and the game was done.
Listen, it was a weekend when Kenny agrees with VAR. I mean, that was a stonewall red card for Graham Shinney on Friday night.
Well, you know, I'm not. You know, I'm not Roger.
We might get to that because in the appeal has gone in today. So there we go. If you want to get your thoughts in, you can do. Rangers fans, come on, where are you? Michael Beale said it was a horror show at the back, but you scored five and it ended up being very convincing. So what did you make of the game on Saturday? Todd Cantwell got Kenny's man of the weekend. Are you starting to really like what you're seeing from him? Are there any players you're not liking what you're seeing? 01419511025, let us know.
01419511025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Kenny Miller are here. It's 01419511025 if you'd like to join us, and we'd love to have you. And you can tweet as well at Clyde SSB. Rangers fans, how do you look back on the weekend, specifically the 90 minutes, because there's a lot there, and maybe more generally still those feelings that are ticking away about maybe being impressed with the future for like Raskin and Cantwell, etc. And maybe there are other players who are making you a bit more concerned about the future. That seemed to be the feeling on Saturday, certainly on the phones. So let us know if you agree or disagree on 01419511025. Michael Beale said the defending or some of it was a horror show. However, he thinks it was convincing in the end and was especially pleased with their final goal.
They've been going great guns, and to be fair to him, Stephen set them up to come and press us today, play with the two strikers, and I thought they did have a go. I thought our first goal was an excellent one, some really good play, and then you're hoping that we kick on. But what I thought we did is we overindulged a little bit. We've become a little bit tippy-tappy. We forgot that when we lose the ball, we have to go and press and be fast across the grass, and I thought we'd become passive. I was really annoyed with the first goal. We take nothing away from the boy, O'Hara. It was a fantastic strike. But if you rewind back, we've got a 4v3 in the attack. We're very wasteful in that moment. And our reaction was dreadful from everybody. From Todd after shooting, from the reaction of people running back, the back four drop off. There's a crossfield ball. We don't get out to it. A cross, another cross. And it's a horror show for us. So I told them that at half time. And I expected us to come out and be better second half. We came, we scored again, and then you're thinking, okay, we'll settle down and go again. We let in another sloppy goal, and then it's the changes from the side. It's the change of shape, it's the changes from the side that go on to win us the game. It was emphatic in the end. Again, we've had over 20 shots and 75% possession, whatever it is, and the last goal, I'm being told, is 60 passes, so that's not something that happens very often.
You were there, Roger. How did it go from horror show to the first five goal haul in over a year in the Scottish Premiership?
Yeah, I was really interested speaking to Michael Beale after the game. Just a little audio clip you played, Gordon. Dreadful, sloppy, horror show. Now, that's phraseology that Michael Beale has not used at any stage of his Rangers career so far. And you wonder now that he's got his feet under the table, now that he's edging towards the end of his first season, if he just feels the need to remind the players of what he expects, because defensively it wasn't good enough. Ben Davis was hooked at 2-2. He was getting a very difficult time from Curtis May in a week after his mistake in the Old Firm defeat at Celtic Park. And I think Michael Beale is finding things out about all of his players. He doesn't like some of the things he's finding out about some of his players. And people will say Rangers don't have a lot to play for before the end of this season. Not at all the case. As well as a Scottish Cup semi-final, there will be players in that Rangers first team squad playing for their future.
Yeah, it's funny that, Kenny, because I wonder how much the feeling, the mood, everything changed because of 11 minutes or whatever at the end of the game. I can detect it. You get a feeling for it on shows like this. Looking at Twitter and so on, at 2-2, 10 minutes to go, this notion that, the league's over anyway, that was about to get blown apart and these phone lines were about to be red hot with rage. But the credit where it's due, you go and put on a very convincing last 10 minutes, doesn't matter when you do it, and it totally alleviates all that stuff.
It does, but I thought they were quite dominant. Me and Michael went through the stats there. You know, when you go over 70% possession, you go 23 shots on goal, 11 of them target, they were quite dominant in that. But it doesn't tell the whole kind of picture of the game. St Mirren were in this game. It did take two goals. It was poor defensively. I mean, he was talking about that first one. He expects his team to be defending when they're attacking, if you know what I mean. So again, and they've been pretty good at Raskin, and particularly his positioning behind the ball to stop that type of goal was normally good. The pitch was probably too big, and then he had opportunities to deal with cross after cross. Nobody's getting there, and then it's a wonder goal for O'Hara, but for a Rangers point of view, it was really, really poor defensively. Similar with the second goal, you see about four Rangers players kind of going for the ball. I think it was Suter that eventually heads it. He ends up falling down, and O'Hara again takes a touch and another wonderful finish. But They were controlling, they did have chances, and then they capitalised on those chances towards the end. And they scored some really, really good goals. He talked about the first goal. It was really, really good play with all the forward players involved. And then obviously the 60 pass goal, it says that's really, really rare. And it was rounded off with a wonderful finish for Scotty Arfield.
He's not been in for a huge number of games, Michael Beale. But, you know, go back to his first game, the Thursday night at home to Hibs, won the game, but conceded a couple of goals. A few days later, they went to Pittodrie, won the game, but he conceded a couple of goals. Celtic at New Year, they conceded two goals. Even when they won at Motherwell the other week, Gordon, they conceded two goals.
Rodge as well conceded two goals.
Then conceded three at Celtic Park and then two at home to St. Mirren.
I think it's nine in the last six league games, isn't it?
You're not going to win week in, week out, as is demanded of Rangers, if you keep allowing the opposition to score two goals a week.
On one hand, Kenny, Michael Beale's just open all the time anyway, you know, win, lose or draw, no matter where things are sitting in that week. But Roger's sort of assessment, maybe it was a good opportunity to go public with a bit of criticism. Is that something you get?
I think so. When the management, when you've won a game 5-2 and you've scored some really, really good goals, and there was some really good attacking play within the game, then, like I said, when you've got that amount of the ball, there is a real element of control for it. But this was different for Motherwell first half, where they were in real control. It was different to Dundee United, where there was real control. They were actually really, really good, and they were attacking with good numbers. They had good movement. They were creating chances. When you've just won 5-2, it's a wonderful time to have a wee poke at your players just to kind of maybe shake them up, because what's coming up is a massive game in 2 weeks' time. And Roger's right, there's going to be futures up for grabs. If the first two signings of the Michael Beale era are anything to go by, there's going to be signs moving into a really important summer for Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, Todd Cantwell, let's hear from Michael Beale on him. He's pleased with his contribution so far.
It's really good to see him getting the box and scoring, and obviously the assist at the end of the long move. It seemed like we had the ball forever, but the assist, he drives through the gap and slides Scotty in. Delighted for Scotty. That's like a showcase reel of Scotty's career, isn't it? Running off the back of people and scoring. It was a great finish. In terms of Todd's playing well. There's more to come. I'm going to stay on him. You know, I'm going to stay on him and make sure we get the player that I think's within him, that he deserves to show everyone, that ultimately I think will really help Rangers moving forward. So I'd like to see him in the first half when he's in and around the box. I'd like to see him put his laces through one or two and not be so soft in his shooting. Having said that, he is doing well. So I don't want to seem like Mr. Grumpy, but I want more from him because I see it. It's there. So why would I not demand more from him? Why would he not demand more from himself? And I think that's what he needs from me. He's not the only one. The crowd seem to like him. He's collecting the man of the matches now. So he's certainly the crowd's favourite at this moment in time.
William is a Rangers fan on the line. Is he one of the main positives at the moment, William?
Gordon, Roger and Rangers legend Kenny Miller.
Hi, William.
My point was to the producer was, right, I need to talk up Michael Beale, right? If you give me time, I'll try and get through it quickly, right? He's managing this thing for Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, right? It was a bit of a disaster for him. So he's come in, he's done brilliantly, right? And Cantwell and Raskin is his two signings, right? And they're getting man of the matches every week. See, he's getting it in the Rangers team, right? I thought Raskin was brilliant at Parkhead, right? That's just, if they had the level of two signings that's coming in, as Kenny stated, right, I reckon there'll be six players Michael Beale's going to sign in the summer, which is going to start for Rangers, right? And if they two level of signings are what we're going to look forward to, I think it's going to be good for Rangers, right? Kenny will like this one. I want two strikers, right? And I'll say this to myself, I want two strikers. One that will score 30 goals, like the one that Celtic have got, right? And your backup is going to chip in with 15 to 20. That's what we need. And Michael Beale, you can't say he's not done a good job. He's come in, he's done brilliant. I think it's a wee bit similar to Gerrard. Well, it'll take his time, because he came in, we couldn't get to Celtic, but then we started to beat them, overtake them. I think that's just got the Michael Beale progression. What do you think, guys?
Well, you don't want much, William. 50 goals between your two strikers. We don't like that, Kenny Miller.
Oh, we'd love that. I absolutely love that. I mean, I think it's hard to disagree with a lot that William says, to be honest with you. I do. I mean, there's been a lot thrown at the Rangers recruitment over the last couple of summers, but all we can judge Michael on is the first two signings is tenure, and at the moment they look very, very good. And if that is signs of what's coming in the summer, then Rangers will be in a far better place next year to challenge. it'll be where he signs him will be really, really interesting, and that might depend on who departs. So there is a big summer ahead. I do agree with William as well. I feel Michael's done a wonderful job since he's been in the building. The improvement is there for all to see. Yes, they lost a cup final. Yes, they lost an Old Firm game at Celtic Park. But let's be honest, there's been better teams over the years that have lost cup finals and lost the Old Firms at Celtic Park. What he needs to do is it's a massive game in a couple of weeks. Listen, it's not going to decide whether he's going to be the Rangers manager or not, but what it's going to do is it's his last chance for silverware. Rangers fans demand silverware, and rightly so. But if these signings are anything to go by, Rangers will be in a far better place because they'll have a real strong pre-season under Michael as well. He'll get them to where they want to be, and I'm sure, again, this goes for probably every team, but he'll want his business done and his business done early. And by the sounds of it, I think he said pre-match, they're at the checkout and waiting.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear him. So he was speaking at the tail end of last week after Ross Wilson departed for Nottingham Forest, just saying that a lot of the plans for the summer were already in place. It was just a case of pressing the button on those deals. He seemed quite comfortable. He said he would fill the void in the short term and just, you know, make sure all these deals get over the line. So he did seem comfortable with it. He said already, Gordon, he's looking at 5 in the summer. As Kenny says, that might even increase, you know. Look at the guys who are still out of contract. There's no news on Morelos or Kent or Jack or McGregor or many others. So 5 at the minute. And if they are of the quality of Cantwell or Raskin, then I think William and the Rangers fans will probably be quite pleased.
Yeah, because you know the way Glasgow works, there's always that counter which just says, some people will just shrug their shoulders and say, yep, they're going to do it against Celtic. You know, that becomes like the barometer, doesn't it? But ultimately, you play a lot of games that aren't against Celtic. You need to make sure you're taking care of them in convincing fashion to get yourself in a position when those games come around. On the flip side, are there any players that aren't impressing you at the moment, William?
Your man Davis at the back. I think, see, your man Sutter, for the time he's not played, right? Except for that one mistake, I thought he's been absolutely brilliant for Rangers. He looks quite assured. Your man Lindstrom, I think he's done. Kent, we didn't miss. Francis Carlos should be playing every week, in my opinion. He shouldn't be trapped. He's a goal threat. He scores goals. Kamara's done. He should be sold. Barisic has been consistent. He's been very good. McGregor could be time up. I can go on and on, but what do you think?
That's an interesting one, right? The headline injury news from the tail end of last week was really Ryan Kent, because we knew that Conor Goldson was out already. And with no offence meant, Ryan Jack has his injury issues now and then anyway. So is there a scenario, if we're talking about this impressive attacking performance that you two witnessed, and if Rangers go and do the same at Pittodrie without Ryan Kent, do we arrive in a realistic situation where Ryan Kent isn't missed, as William says, and doesn't start a semi-final against Celtic?
I think the way that Rangers are playing at the moment, they do have players that can fill the role that Ryan Kent has been playing under Michael. Previously, when he's playing on the left-hand side up in front of that front three, yes, he likes to come inside and he can wander, but predominantly he's been out there on the left-hand side. Now you've got Cantwells, you've got Tillmans, you've got Arfields who come in and score.
If they play
that kind of narrow way, like a three in midfield or a four in midfield, he's called it sometime, with the two strikers. Because see the way the two strikers play, they play on sides of the pitch. You know, so you've got Morelos who's playing off one side, Sakala. They've done the exact same with Colak and Sakala at Hibs, and it worked a treat. They were excellent that night and scored a lot. Scored 4, probably should have scored more. So I just think there's other players now that can fill it if Ryan Kent's not available. Mm-hmm. Listen, if Ryan Kent's fit, I would expect him to play.
Yeah, regardless of everything.
No, I don't think it's not as that. But I think if you're talking about two players to play in it, I still think maybe him and Cantwell could be the two that would play in that position, maybe ahead of a Jack and a Raskin. It does need to play and affect the game more, which I do think since Michael's came back in, he has done. I get it, in the Old Firm games and the cup finals and the big games, he's potentially not affected it as much. But I still think he might be one of the best to play that position.
Roger, the assessment from William, we had a fair few actually after the game on Saturday. I feel like Ben Davies got a bit of stick. I feel like John Lundstrom was getting a bit of stick. Is it fair or was it over the top?
Ben Davies didn't play well. You don't know whether it's a legacy, whether his confidence took a hit off the back of the mistake at Celtic Park the week before. But from very early in the game, he looked ropey. There was a moment where I think it was Greg Kilty went down under his challenge when he was trying to run through and go. Referee waved play on. I thought he got away with that one. Tony Watt nipped the ball off his toe in the first half as well. And then in the build-up to St Mirren's second equaliser, Curtis Main just terrorised them, got across in which James Tavernier headed behind for a corner. Rangers didn't clear the corner. Mark O'Hara scored the second goal, and very shortly after that he was replaced by Glenn Kamara, with John Lundstrom moving back into the back four. He didn't look comfortable. I don't know if it's a confidence issue. He's only played a couple of games beside John Souter. He looked better alongside Connor Goldson, but it'll be fascinating to see long term what Michael Beale's preferred pairing becomes.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, it's a new week on Beat the Pundit, a clean slate. Let's see what we can come up with. I'm hoping for a strong week for the listeners, I must be honest. So if you fancy it tonight, it's 0141 951 1025. You give us a call before 7 o'clock and it could be you who takes on Roger Hannah or Kenny Miller. So get in touch.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannah and Kenny Miller are here. It's 0141 951 1025, and you can tweet us as well at Clyde SSB. So please do. If you're just joining us, we looked back on an eventful day at Rugby Park yesterday. Lots of Celtic fans full of praise for the first 20 minutes or so. Some praise for Iwata and Kobayashi, the guys in here not fully having the suggestions that O could have been sent off. If there's anything you think we've missed, Kelly fans, it would be nice to hear from you. We spoke a bit about Rangers' performance at Ibrox as well. Still lots to come. Any St Johnstone fans out there? I know we don't hear from many, but you've sacked your manager. Is it the right call or the wrong call at this stage in the season? And how do you look back on Callum Davidson's time in charge? And we'll speak to James McPake, League One title winner, at the weekend as well. So lots to get through, but give us a call right now.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
I like a Monday night that fills me with optimism, that we can get something done for the listeners, get them up. Strike first, as Derek McInnes said. Don't go behind early. But you do, two decent pundits in here on a Monday night, I'm afraid. Aidan, you fancy your chances?
I'll give it a go, see what happens.
That's the spirit. And I must admit, Aidan, I can throw these things out there and hope that nobody checks, but I reckon you're a history maker. I don't think we've ever had a Montrose fan on Beat the Pundit. Sum up life as a Montrose fan this season.
If you'd asked me 6 years ago if I'd be disappointed at being sitting seventh in League One, I probably would have laughed at you. But yeah, it's been a bit of a so-so season in comparison to the last few years when we've reached the playoffs. But I won't complain too much.
Just think, Aidan, if Paul Watson can score his first goal in 2 years, you can win Beat the Pundit.
I reckon you could outpace Paul Watson a majority of the time, to be fair. But
I would disagree with that.
Gordon Duncan did see me in sportswear as he described it in all day, so there's a possibility.
Leisure wear, it was remarkable. Aidan, to be fair though, you are up against the Palmerston Pep this weekend, so if you can put him in his place, make sure it's a miserable weekend for 2 weeks in a row, we'll be forever grateful, okay?
I'm off on Saturday, so I might go down and boo him.
Lovely. Hurl all sorts of abuse. You have our permission. Heads, it will be Roger Hannah, and tails, it will be Kenny Miller. You get any Montrose facts you want to give us? No, just leave them to Roger.
Yeah.
Well, you can play Beat the Pundit instead. It's tails. So what we'll do is give some Greatest Hits radio nice and loud to the ear of Kenny Miller, and we'll get the clock ready, Aidan. It's 30 seconds. Just answer as many as you can, and you're more than welcome to pass and move on to the next one if you fancy it, okay?
Yeah, next one.
Right, top man then, your time starts now. Name any trophy Callum Davidson won as St Johnstone manager.
Scottish Cup.
Who is bottom of the Scottish Premiership?
Kilmarnock.
Outside the Old Firm, who's the only team in the Premiership with a positive goal difference?
Aberdeen.
Who were crowned league winners in League One at the weekend?
Dunfermline.
Which side suffered the biggest defeat of the weekend across the SPFL?
Oh, Cove.
Who's got more international caps, James Forrest or James McCarthy?
James McCarthy.
Name any Scottish manager in the English Championship.
Alex Neil.
Okay, let's bring back Kenny Miller. Kenny, can you hear us? Got us now? Good man. 30 seconds on the clock. It's the same set of questions, and your time starts now. Name any trophy Callum Davidson won as St Johnstone manager.
Scottish Cup.
Who's bottom of the Scottish Premiership?
Ross County.
Outside the Old Firm, who's the only team in the Premiership with a positive goal difference?
Dundee.
Who were crowned League One winners Dunfermline at the weekend? Which side suffered the biggest defeat of the weekend across the SPFL?
Stranraer.
Who's got more international caps, James Forrest or James McCarthy?
James Forrest.
Name any Scottish manager in the English Championship.
David Moyes. Oh, I didn't.
And who's got the smallest stadium capacity in the Scottish Premiership?
Livingston.
Okay, what do you think, Aidan?
I've got a funny feeling we might be on for a tie here.
First one, you both got it, Callum Davidson. Easy question to get you up and running because he won them both, Scottish Cup and League Cup. So it's 1-1. Bottom of the Premiership, sorry Aidan, it's Ross County. Kenny goes 1 in front. The only team in that you just head scrambled here,
all over the
only
place.
Team in the Premiership with a positive goal difference apart from the Old Firm is Hearts, and it's only +2. So people have been questioning certain aspects of the competitiveness of the league this weekend. So there we go. You both got Dunfermline, so well done. It's 3-2 to Kenny. The biggest defeat in the SPFL, I just thought you might be a lower league specialist, Aidan. It was Stranraer. They lost 8-0. 8-0 oh, wow. to East Fife, hence why they changed their manager at the weekend as well, Roger Hanna. So 4-2 Kenny Miller. But there was life left in Aidan, because you're 50-50 went Aidan's way. James McCarthy has got 42, James Forrest 38. Not much in it. And name any Scottish manager in the English Championship.
I jumped in early. I jumped in. I was waiting for the Premiership
and
to come.
Aidan got Alex Neil and equalised. Then Aidan ran out of questions, which meant if you had just told me that Ross County had the smallest capacity, you would have won it. You went Livy. There can't be much in that, producer Michael, is there?
I think it's Livy, be about 10.
Not much, he's saying. He looks panicky.
He looks comfortable.
He looks panicky as if it might be. No, I think it's Ross County.
I think, did Livy not get more seats in when Kenny was manager?
I'll tell you what they've done though. They've taken seats out to put media stuff in there. So maybe they checked the recent numbers.
He's tool belt out to get a nice wee media desk in there. Right. Here's the deal. Right, I'm going to read the tiebreaker. I will get Kenny to write his answer down, and I'll then invite you.
Why
to
Why is everybody smiling here? Is this a crazy one?
They're both crazy. I've got two options and they're both wild. Which one would you like me to go for, producer Michael?
Number 2, I like it.
Okay. Right, here it is. You ready? This is ridiculous. Since Rangers returned to the Premiership, what is their overall goal difference?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, seriously. It's just a guess. We need to separate you anyway. So since Rangers returned to the Premiership, what is their overall goal difference? Kenny Miller's now counting the seasons. Hurry up.
Right,
how many seasons is that? I don't mind telling you both.
Plus.
No, don't say it. Write it down. Oh, nearly. Right, okay, Aidan, what's your attempt?
I'll go 260.
Okay, Kenny, show me your paper. Oh, right, I need a calculator for this, I think. Do I?
No, you don't.
Who's the winner? My arithmetic makes me struggle. There we are. Nah, even I think can handle this one.
Too much.
You panic. Yeah, Kenny's gone 50, too high.
50,
the answer is, and Roger's very close. The answer is 315. So well done to
rubbish.
You, Aidan.
Oh, smashing.
I was expecting more than that, Aidan. Where did you go? 600 and something.
Poor, aye.
Yeah.
Get your count an extra season.
Yeah. Well done, Aidan. The signed ball. I don't know if we won't have ever sent one to Montrose before, but we'll get the producer on it. Well done.
Nice one. Thanks very much.
Good man.
Well done, Aidan.
A Montrose fan. I'm Beat the Pundit. Who knew Roger Hanna?
Absolutely.
Such a thing was possible.
And on behalf of the pundits, if I can quote Gordon Dale, if we're going to lose one early.
Yeah, exactly.
Plenty of time this week to recover.
I think it's because you're through. I mean, to be fair, you're now a fairly regular on a Monday night as well, but maybe Friday, alongside Hugh Keevans, that's when you feel at your best, your most confident.
I jumped in with that question on the Premier. I was waiting on the Premiership to come in, and the Championship threw me in the last minute.
Nothing worse. Anyway, 01419511025. Apparently, Wolfman's Got Nards is on Twitter. Says that Montrose fan Aidan sounded exactly like Graham Souness. Did he? It's not something I noticed. Souness impression. Anyway,
you think Graham Souness comes on and does Beat the Pundit just under a false name because he doesn't want us to know who he is?
Yeah, I'm thinking unlikely. If I'm being honest, yeah, I would say so. That wouldn't be the backstory we'd make up either, is it?
Yeah,
would you go Montrose? You know, if you were trying to just make something up about your football allegiance.
Yeah, no.
Nah. You've got air like you do.
Depo again at your weekend. Man, he did. You're getting more excited than me now when you're shouting these goals in on a Saturday afternoon.
Some man, honestly. And what about the championship? How good is that going
to
be?
It's bonkers. Nobody seems to want to win it. You know, James McPake sealed League One title with that 5-0 win against Queen of the South at the weekend. He's going in to this madhouse that is the championship next season. You know, Queen's Park get back to winning ways narrowly against Hamilton on Friday night. And you thought Dundee were going to blow up 3-1 down at home to Morton on Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Kwame Thomas got a couple near the end, gets it back to 3-3. They're a point clear. And then just look at the games you've got. Inverness play in advance of their cup semi-final weekend. They go to Hamilton, so they'll have played a game more than the rest by tomorrow night. They could go into the top four for the first time all season tomorrow night. Friday night, Ayr fourth, Queen's Park second, go head-to-head at Somerset, where Ayr beat them 5-0 earlier in the season. And then Saturday, Inverness again at home to Dundee. Great games.
And all finishes on a Friday night. Queen's Park against Dundee. Imagine it was a Friday night shootout to win the championship.
Is producer Chris thinking of a special Friday night Super Scoreboard show?
And by the way, good question on Beat the Pundit. How many Fridays is Queen's Park played on? Every Friday night is Queen's Park.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's an advantage or a disadvantage. I don't know.
Well, Rangers always seem to play first, don't they?
Twice as much a chance though, because the game there on Friday night wasn't a telly game. The game last Friday was simply because the ground
share stadium at Oakle
View. So Stenish Muir get priority for Oakle View, so they have to move the games forward.
Anyway, Martin's a St Mirren fan on the line. Martin, what's your point for the guys tonight?
Hi, thanks very much for letting us on. It was really to say, with COVID not affecting player fitness anymore, why aren't we going back to three subs? St Mirren's game on Saturday was just the latest example of where the Old Firm's ability to bring on a string of international players late in a game has destroyed our chances in those games. But more generally, and maybe more importantly, football's crying out for more competition with the big rich teams, not rule changes that make it even more difficult to close the gap.
I suppose the thing is, Martin, the clubs voted for it. Does that surprise you that smaller clubs voted for it, given how unequal financially our league is?
They voted for it at a time when there was an issue. There isn't that issue anymore.
No, they voted after that as well though, to keep it.
No, did they? I didn't realise that. Yeah. I guess there's certain things that sway decision making in Scottish football. For instance, why are we not following the English example in betting? Perhaps because the two Old Firm teams are both sponsored by betting. So there's a power imbalance in Scottish football that's reflected in these decisions.
I know what you mean about the substitutes, Martin. I'll go down a strange avenue for you here. I used to watch the England rugby coach, Eddie Jones, the old rugby coach.
The strangest of avenues.
When they went to seven subs in rugby, he called them his finishers and had planned out when they would come on, who they would come on for. And he actually kept players back. Guys who may have started in the team were held back for the bench because he felt they had the qualities in the last 20 or 30 minutes of a game and the opposition was tiring. And you always thought, well, that's a bit unfair, the depth of talent the English rugby team has compared to some of the teams we're taking on. And Martin's right. That is now what's happening in Scottish football because of the depth. You know, Stephen Robinson mentioned it after the game at Ibrox on Saturday. He was sending on Thierry Small at 18 or 19, Kieran Offord at 18 or 19, and Rangers were sending on Yanis Hadji, Glenn Kamara, Robbie Matondo, three international players, Scott Arfield, four international players at that stage. So I can understand where Martin's coming from. I understand where Stephen Robinson's coming from, but the clubs did vote for it.
Are you surprised they voted for it? The smaller clubs, Kenny? No.
No, because they only play against Rangers and Celtic three times each.
So you've
got another 30-32 games, depending on where you finish.
Well, you hope you can benefit from it.
Absolutely. And I guarantee every single club will have benefited from it at some point by putting a sub on who makes an impact. It was after the third sub.
Yeah.
Or, by the way, they get a player injured late on and they've got the ability to bring somebody else on. I get it. When you're playing against Rangers and Celtic, it becomes unfair. Again, there's even more subs on now, so you can even put more guys on the bench that are actually able to come on. You don't maybe need to think as much as who you're putting on the bench.
Anyway, Martin, why are you bothered about Rangers substitute? You're about to get in the top six for the first time since 1985. Come on, talk up, St Mirren.
Absolutely. It's been a fantastic season. I think Stephen Robinson has done a remarkable job, an absolutely brilliant job. And I want to publicly apologise to him as well, because I was one of the idiots
at the end of the game and were stuffed 2-0 in the League Cup, that was calling him for everything at the end of the game. So what a job he's done, and it's been brilliant to watch, and it's been great, and I wish I was as super confident as you are, Roger, that we're there, because I've been a St Mirren fan, we're always worried about a wee hiccup at the end, but I'm pretty sure we'll do it.
Well, I know a couple of St Mirren fans who say that the worst team they could be playing at home to is Kilmarnock, because Kilmarnock have taken 2 points away from home all season. And the St Mirren fans' logic is, well, if they're going to get a win somewhere, they're going to get a win in Paisley.
That sounds like a doomsday scenario, that, doesn't it, Martin? That's a glass half empty approach, that, surely.
No, I'm sure we'll do it. And if we don't do it, Big Jim will help us up at Dundee United, I think.
How good's Mark O'Hara been?
Really good. He's been the midfield has been outstanding all season. Him, Erehon before he went, Bacchus as well, Gogic since he moved into midfield as well, been tremendous, really, really good. Best part of the team.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an interesting race for that top six, European spots as well, relegation. There is a lot to celebrate going on to the end of the season. It is an interesting one though, because the subs is just one part of it. There is a lot of soul searching, and I'll be honest, we could do a week of shows on this, never mind the next 3 minutes or whatever I'm going to expect from you, but about, you know, gaps and how big the gap is between the big two and others, and is it the biggest it's ever been? I think financially it is, and therefore it's bound to be reflected to a point in terms of the footballing level. And then when it gets to the head-to-heads, because I take your point, Kenny, I remember that thinking, well, there must be a reason the clubs have gone for it. They must know it's going to be a miserable afternoon against the Old Firm,
which it would be anyway, potentially.
This probably makes it worse, but there must be something. They must just see that it gives them the chance to do it in the so-called winnable fixtures. But it is some gap, isn't it? When you look at the points total, that Rangers are going to finish second with a points total that would have won you a number of leagues in seasons gone by. You look at the head-to-heads, they're not even that close. If you're talking Saturday, St Mirren were good. St Mirren go to Ibrox and score twice. Rangers were talking about defensive horror show, and Rangers win 5-2, Roger. So that is, yeah. I think a lot of people are looking at subs and money and all this sort of stuff to think, well, the gap's just huge.
Yeah, the gap is big. And you can tell that when Rangers, who are 12 points behind Celtic, Rangers are going and scoring 4 at Easter Road, they're scoring 4 at Tynecastle, they're scoring 3 at Pittodrie. That tells you where the rest of the league is. But below that, it is competitive. I think Martin's team, St Mirren, are the one that's probably bucking the trend, because you would expect Aberdeen, Hearts and Hibs to be in that top six. Stephen Robinson said, I think he used the phrase, there's nothing structurally in place at the football club to suggest we're a top six side. So that shows you, you know, the quality they've done. Mm. Livingston as well, you know, they might sneak into the top six depending on results at the weekend. But the majority of the league is panning out, Gordon, the way the budgets would dictate it would pan out, you would think. The top two are the top two. The three other big city sides are in the top six.
Dundee United would be a major outlier on that,
I would have thought, listen, if St Mirren and Livy are going to be punching above their weight, somebody therefore needs to punch beneath their weight, and this season that's been Dundee United.
But I mean, certainly, Kenny, like we said, the head-to-heads, because we get weeks or nights on here where there's like a perception of crisis at Rangers because they can't beat Celtic. It's got nothing to do with all the rest. Nobody's really laying a glove on either of them at the moment.
You know, and I think it's more than just gap in money, and because the Rangers and Celtic have always spent more money.
Yeah, but that's the
fact. And I also think Hibs, Hearts and Aberdeen are still spending probably more money than what they have done in recent years. What I think they've got now is they've got the better players because of the amount of money they're spending. I think they've got two top coaches as well who have them set
getting
up.
Getting the most out of it.
And how they've got them set up to attack, how they've got them set up to defend, and they're getting the best out of the players that they've got in front of them.
The only thing, Roger, on that is I read an interesting piece in the, I think it was the Athletic at the weekend, talking about, we sometimes do that. Rangers and Celtic have always had more money. But if you actually look at how much more money, and the article at the weekend was talking about 1994, right? Rangers were the top spenders in the league at that point. 7.7 million, right? 7.7 million. So 1994, that was only just over double Aberdeen. Aberdeen were 2.9, so just over double. Whereas at the moment, Celtic are 10 times what Aberdeen's is. So that gap is growing, and you're seeing it.
I know. Listen, obviously in Scotland, we are most interested in Scottish football and the idiosyncrasies in Scottish football. You can probably mirror that throughout
Europe. Do you think
Europe.
So?
Yeah, I think.
Do you think there's a gap anywhere where Team 1 has 10 times the budget of Team 3?
Be fascinated to see what the likes of Bayern Munich and some of the, you know, Bayern Munich have won about 10 straight titles. You know, PSG, until they slipped last year, had won something like 7 or 8 straight titles. And Holland is normally a shootout between Ajax and PSV, although it looks as if Feyenoord they're going to win the league this season. Portugal is a shootout between Benfica and Porto. You know, and a lot of countries look down south. Now, I know the budgets will not, you know, don't really compare, but Man City will have the biggest budget in there and will win the league in all likelihood for the fifth time in 6 years. So it's not just in Scotland that happens now. And this is where all the European money, we talked last week, Gordon, Robbie Nielsen gets sacked because he's putting the £6 million European bounty at risk. If Hearts get the £6 million, as they did last season, the gap to Hibs and Aberdeen will worry Hibs and Aberdeen fans.
And thank you very much to Martin, 01419511025. If you want to get in touch, something really important I want to run past you first though.
Cash for Kids Day. Clyde One.
Cash for Kids Day is just over a week away, Thursday the 27th of April. That's the big day. We're all going to join together to try and help children affected by the cost of living crisis. But you don't even have to wait until then to get involved, because we've got an unbelievable competition that you can enter right now. It's at that time of the year. If you're like me, you'll all be desperate. You can win a 7-night family holiday to the gorgeous island of Fuerteventura. You fly from Edinburgh on the 5th of August and head for the Dunas Club Apartments. We're talking white sand beaches, turquoise waters, waves, all the rest of it, and give you a week of relaxation and excitement, all thanks to the lovely folk at Barhead Travel who've donated this holiday. And as if that wasn't enough, our friends at 101 Convenience Store have very kindly donated €500 spending money as well. Now, entries to the competition are just £3, and all of that goes to Cash for Kids to help local families who really need it. So it's like the ultimate win-win. But the full details and entry for online at clyde1.com/CFKday. Best of luck.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Kenny Miller and Roger Hanna are here at 0141 951 1025. And if you'd rather tweet us, you can do as well. You'll find us there at Clyde SSB if you want to get in touch. Let me just stand corrected, by the way. When I said before the break that article I was reading about budgets and all that, and Celtics was about 10 times Aberdeen, it was 6 times, not 10. My apologies. It's been a long Monday. I hope you'll forgive me. But anyway, 01419511025 on the phones. Let's bring in a man, the first man in Scotland this season, in fact, to manage one of our professional clubs to the league title. It's Dunfermline boss James McPake joins us. James, congratulations. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very good. And just enjoying the last couple of days and getting rid of the hangover. No, but I'm good,
I can imagine. It's one of those ones where it's looked likely for a while now. How does it feel to get it over the line and do it at this stage of the season?
Yeah, we're delighted, obviously, as a group. And there has been a lot of talk, particularly from the game at home against Falkirk, which I think was the 7th of March. So since then, when the gap opened up a bit, the question wasn't more, are we going to win it? It was kind of, when are we going to win it? And that brings its pressure in itself as well. I think I said in the press after the game, there were only 3 people in that dressing room that had won a league before. So it was new to a lot of us, and we're just delighted to get it done now. Delighted for the players, for the group and for the football club.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be as delighted for everyone else, for sure. Have you had the chance to reflect on what it means to you though? I mean, it must be a special achievement for a manager.
Yeah, I'm probably not at that stage yet, because we have been celebrating and we've been proud of what we're doing. But no, look, as a manager, as you're proud when you get some success. I had a little bit at Dundee when we got to the Premiership via the playoffs. But this one feels really special, having won a league. I know Kenny's there in the studio, and Kenny's won a few. So it was a new feeling for me, a new feeling for Dave. And as I said, only 3 people in that dressing room had done it. So it is a very good achievement. And just for myself, I'm proud. But you know, in these games, you are in football anyway, it's got a habit of kicking you. So I think maybe this time I've made a conscious effort just to soak it all up and enjoy it, because it can be hard at times, so you have to enjoy these moments.
James, it's Roger Hanna. Many congratulations, well done. I spoke to your goalie, Dennis Mehmet, last week. 33 games played, 1 defeat, 19 goals conceded in 33 games. Is that the foundation for the title win?
I think it has been, Roger. Not just for Dennis has been excellent, but the team on the whole, in terms of the goals we've conceded, the clean sheets we've kept, it has been. And it was something when we went in that we wanted to get better at. We had watched a lot of the footage, and that's not having a go at Dunfermline last season, because that's not my place, but we had conceded a lot of goals for set plays last year, things like that, and we wanted to go in. And you go in with the buzzwords that go about, a philosophy, a vision or whatnot, but we simply went in to just try and be better defensively as a group, and then see what we could do over the course of the season. So that has been probably the thing we've worked hardest on, getting that side of the game right, and that starts from the strikers and right throughout the team. But Dennis has been fantastic. I think he's now, he beat Ian Westwater's record for most clean sheets in the one season, and I think he's maybe a couple away from the, I don't know what the record is, but it might even be the full the SPFL's clean sheet record for a season. So he's been excellent, and the good thing about that is that with three games to play and everything is wrapped up, but we've lost one game and we're unbeaten in 21 now, and we want that to continue. So there's a little bit of motivation there for that to continue in the last three games as well.
It's funny, Roger, because our resident Dunfermline fan Stephen Mills sent me a stat, and it's kind of hurt my head a bit, because he says if Dunfermline hadn't scored a goal this season, if they hadn't scored any, they'd still be 8th in the table because they kept 20 clean sheets. Now, I must admit, I can't really figure that out, because once you take off Dunfermline's goals scored, I don't know what that does to the other teams. So that'll keep me awake tonight, but I see what he's coming from in terms of the defensive performances. James, I think from definitely the outside and probably internally as well, there's this notion about Dunfermline, you know, shouldn't be a League One club. They, you know, obviously were for a reason. Does it feel good to be able to restore a club at least closer? I mean, some would say in size, maybe even Premiership, but, you know, to be climbing to a feeling of where people believe they should be.
Yeah, but I think that's something that we've tried to explain to the players, and something that not annoys, a strange way of putting it, but it's something that's not sat well with us, the fact that everyone does see a club the size of Dunfermline with a fan base shouldn't be in League One. But the truth about it is, we were there for a reason. We got relegated. You've got to, whatever league you're in, you've got to earn the right to be in it, or the opposite, you find yourself in a league because you weren't good enough the season before. So we had to respect that league. It is a pretty strong league this year. Falkirk are decent, Airdrie are decent, and Edinburgh had a fantastic run, and you now see Alloa who are doing well, and Marvin's got Queen of the South going well. So it's a pretty competitive League One. So we were under no illusion that because we were Dunfermline Athletic, because we can get 7,000-8,000 fans at home, that we just had the divine right to go in and win that league. We had to get that across to the players, and we were very consistent with that message, and we tried to respect the full league, and I think we've done that. As now, we can now say we're a Championship club again. Is a Championship where we want to be? Well, no, it's not, but again, it's a league that we find ourselves in for next season. And but we'll enjoy this moment, and we'll enjoy the next couple of weeks, and what there's been work going on in the background regarding recruitment anyway, so it's not just because we're promoted now that we start looking for players to help our squad. We've been doing that, but look, we want to get into the Championship, we want to be competitive in that league as well, and see what happens.
Hi James, it's Kenny, congratulations pal.
Thanks Kenny.
Yeah, but it must make you feel even more pleasing, because what, like you said, Dunfermline are a big club, they maybe shouldn't be there, and that comes with a pressure. James, you would have went into that job under a pressure to win the league and restore the club to the Championship, and again maybe beyond this year if things go well. But you must be pleased for your players to actually stand up to that pressure and go and deliver the results, and then like that run Rodgers just says, one defeat is, it's an incredible run, like you say, in a really, really competitive league.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Kenny. That was the one that did worry me, the fact that being and everyone outside, and I don't mean pundits, I just mean everyone expecting Dunfermline go to League One, then they're just going to walk the league and go and win it. And my worry with that was that the players believed that and they thought that's what it was going to be. And I think that's why we had to, from the start, from day one, we had to go in and not criticise the players, but we had to go in and explain that we're, because of a lot of them that were there, and obviously some moved on, but because of a lot of them, obviously we were in that league, so we had to go in and prove that we were good enough to get out of the league. And to be fair, the players have bought into that, and there was pressure that came with it. Thankfully, we started the season pretty well and got on a good run. And in all the big games as well, this has probably been the most pleasing part of the season for me. And the really big, well, they're all big games, as we know, but the big games that carry the big atmospheres, whether that be Falkirk at our place, Falkirk at their place, the game on Saturday when we knew we had to win, certain games like that, the players have really turned up, so they've shown they can handle the pressure. And I do think that a lot of the players in there had a real point to prove, because they were disappointed with last season. And I mean, we were quite deliberate on the fact that we wanted to keep most of the squad. We've only signed three players on permanent. We've been very lucky, good with the loan market, and some of our loan signings have been excellent. But the three players we brought in, and Kyle Benedictus, Chris Hamilton and Max Little, the other goalkeeper, that's the only three permanent ones we did bring in, because we were quite happy with the squad, but we knew we had to get the confidence back first and foremost, get them working hard, and by doing that, we believed we had a good enough squad to compete in that league. But yeah, that point you made, I thought, is spot on. It was that was the worry for me, was that the expectation of being a Dunfermline player or being Dunfermline Athletic Football Club in League One carries that expectation that you get at big clubs. And I'm not saying we're a big club, but just from an outsider looking in that league, then we're perceived as a big club.
And Radio Clyde's resident Dunfermline supporter, James Stephen Mill, was marching about here saying, not only have you gone up, you're going to go straight through the championship and up again.
I'd be delighted to hear that.
That's a level of expectation you're going to have to deal with next season as well.
No, well, I think Stephen's, he's a good guy. I think he's definitely been drinking a lot more than me this weekend, and that's why he's saying that. When he sobers up, then I'm sure the realisation will kick in, and he'll understand just how hard the championship's going to be. Like, I respect that league. I was in it for 2.5 years as a manager, so it's a tough league. I've enjoyed watching it this year. It's very competitive. I heard you speaking about it earlier, and we'll get these three games out the road, but I'm not going to lie, I heard he's talking about the Friday night games, I love them as well. So there's excitement in the championship, and if we can keep our fans on board, we're working hard, we're making them proud, then we'll make East End Park a really tough place for any championship team to come to as well.
Brilliant, James, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the celebrations before the hard work starts again.
Cheers, thank you.
Good man, that was James McPake, Dunfermline manager. Of course, leading the Pars to the League One title at the weekend in very, very convincing fashion. And I suppose, you know, now, without making James blush, and he's off the line, Roger, maybe a bit of indication in there as well that from the outside, a lot of people felt the Dundee ending was very harsh on him. So it's not always easy, and Kenny knows it's an unforgiving environment. You then take that in the chin and pick yourself up and go again.
Yeah, and it was a manager who had managed Championship and Premiership football, and he's now gone down to League One. He has shouldered that burden of expectation that he spoke about. If you're Dunfermline and you're in the third tier, you'd expect it to go out and win that league, even if Falkirk are in it, even if Airdrie are winning. Mm-hmm. And it's not always as easy as that. So not only has he won it with three or four games to spare, having lost one game. I think it was away at Montrose earlier on in the season.
Don't say you think, Roger. You know where it was. You know what the score were and who the scorers were.
He knows the temperature that day.
Aidan was there. Aidan from Beat the Pundit was there.
He knows how long the traffic delays were crossing the Kincardine Bridge. He knows the lot.
Two things. You never see Stephen Milne and Sammy the Tammy together.
That's true. Is he the man?
And
under
second
the Tammy
thing, they can come up as high as they like, as long as they bring the steak bridey with them.
Yeah, I
best
agree.
Snack in Scottish football.
Wonderful, wonderful addition to the championship. Right, 0141 951 1025. We've had another managerial sacking this weekend. What did you make of it? St Johnston and Callum Davidson parting ways. And I'm going to be slightly unfair here. It feels like this one has had a bigger knock-on effect on the rest of Scottish football than previous St Johnston managerial departures, purely because of just how successful Callum Davidson was previously. Does that mean it was the wrong call, or had the time come? We'll look at that situation next.
number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Kenny Miller are here in the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. You can still get us though, still time on 0141 951 1025, and we are on Twitter as well at Clyde SSB. So we'll try and get round the final talking points from the weekend that we've not mentioned yet. Let's see where we're to start. Is the obvious one, Roger Hanna, a managerial departure with not very many games to go. It's Callum Davidson, St Johnston. What did you make of it when you heard that news?
I have to say I wasn't surprised. You just got the feeling that St Johnston were in a bit of free fall. I think it's 2 wins from 16. People tend to forget they were in the relegation playoff last season and had to win a second leg at home to Cali Thistle to avoid relegation. And I think, you know, at a time when the club has been put up for sale by the chairman, Steve Brown, I think they have to do everything in their power to preserve that Premiership place. And I think they probably feel, listen, Callum Davidson is a legend. He always will be. St Johnston will never do again what they did 2 years ago, winning both domestic cups in the same season. But I think Callum Davidson's time had probably come to an end.
You know, when Roger's right, you never like seeing managers leave their position, particularly someone who's done so well and been at the club for so long. But like he says, he'll be remembered forever for what was achieved 2 seasons ago. There's been a top six finish in there as well, I think, maybe the season before. But last couple of seasons, it's been tough. And I think just when you thought they produced a couple of results ago, maybe about 5-6 games ago, to maybe get them out of it, and maybe we're even talking about top six, there's been a real poor run of results. So it's decision made again, similar to Hearts, in terms of Hearts trying to protect that third in the European money. It's maybe to protect the Premiership place.
Because it's very easy for people on the outside, and I've already heard a bit of this, Roger, to say, won 2 cups, this is, you know, should have goodwill left in the bank and all that sort of stuff. And I think I started noticing this a lot, right, with, I call it in my own head, it's like Derek McInnes syndrome, right? He was the first one that I noticed, and then a number of managers followed where everybody on the outside seems to be all uptight about this manager losing, but actually that fan base, there's lots of people in there. And it just reminds me of Aberdeen, because, you know, people used to say, what more do Aberdeen fans want? But see, ultimately, see, if the Aberdeen fans do want something different, then so be it. Yeah. And I've noticed that with a few clubs and
Hearts.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that, but maybe this one doesn't even quite fall into that category, because the cups were magnificent, generation defining, but they were 2 years ago.
And listen, in football management, more than ever before, Gordon, you are only as good as your last result. And St Johnston, who I thought St Johnston, along with your Motherwell, were clear of this relegation fight a few weeks ago. And it's amazing how quickly things can turn round. You know, a couple of bad defeats for St Johnston, losing at home to Ross County, losing away to Livingston, coupled with a couple of big wins for Dundee United, home to Hibs, and then away at Motherwell at the weekend. And suddenly, St Johnston are right in the thick of it. There's one game left, home to Hibs at the weekend. Stephen McLean will take charge. And then after that, it really is dog-eat-dog in that bottom six. Kilmarnock are in it, United are in it, County are in it, St Johnston are very much in it.
When you look at what happens as well after you win a cup, the players that leave, and Sean Rooney, Ali McCann, Jamie McCart, Jason Kerr, it's just hard to regenerate all the time. Kenny, has that been a huge part of it?
I think when you talk about Kerr leaving, Rooney leaving, McCann leaving, that was three really important players for them. And it's hard to replace those types of players. You know, you go into the best intentions when you go into a transfer window of recruiting and strengthening, but ideally you would strengthen with them there. You're no one to having to replace arguably maybe your three best players and then some. You know, for teams like the smaller teams, like we've already talked about the budgets and the restraints on the smaller teams, that was always going to be a big ask.
Yeah, Roger, given the timing though, they're not long to go. And what we've seen many clubs go down this road, you said, you know, Steve McLean in interim charge, never been a manager before. Is there any validity in the argument of, well, you're double cup winning manager, you might as well give him to the end of the season? Is that not the way it works?
Yeah, listen, I played that argument for Robbie Nielsen last week. I said I thought he deserved a little bit more loyalty, and you get shouted down by Hearts fans. So I think St Johnston fans would probably shout me down tonight as well. I think Steve McLean is very much a different personality from Callum Davidson. and maybe a different approach, maybe a different voice in the dressing room, maybe a different selection as well in terms of personnel and tactics might just shake St Johnson out of this slump at the minute. They desperately need to try something different because they've sleepwalked into this relegation battle. I remember many, many years ago, Hibs missing out in the top six on the last day of the 33-game campaign, and then they just crashed. They ended up in the relegation playoff place. They lost to Hamilton. They went to the Championship. Sometimes you can sleepwalk into danger like that, and I think Steve Brown and the St Johnson board wanted to do everything they could to make sure they weren't the victims this time.
And the cutthroat nature of it, Kenny, this is probably a difficulty across all football clubs now, but particularly ones of St Johnson's size who then go and get that success. It's almost like if you're Callum Davidson and you don't get that big move that you might deserve on the back of the cup success, it possibly only does end one way then, and like the only way is down sort of thing. And it's brilliant with hindsight. Callum Davidson, I don't think it's going to go and hand in his resignation the summer that they just win the two cups. It's not quite what I'm saying, but you know, you're now left where it ends this way, and it's just, you know, different from what perhaps he deserved it to be.
I think so, because again, we'll go back. It was a wonderful job, and it was an incredible achievement to win the both cups. But you're right, when you go through a season like they go through last year, and even off the back, it doesn't really matter how it goes. I mean, there is probably a ceiling to what they could achieve. Even if they got a top six finish, maybe the following season you're back down fighting. It probably is going to end one way, you know, unless that move comes. But like you say, it's off the back of that two cup winning season. It was a wonderful opportunity maybe to leave, but if it doesn't come, then like you say, you're not going to hand your resignation when you've just done a job like that and created history, you know. So it's tough. It's a cutthroat business. More often than not, these are the types of situations that managers will leave clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, but listen, it's football, and I'm sure Callum will move on to different things as well.
Remarkably similar to Tommy Wright's departure. You know, Tommy Wright was the first St Johnson manager to win a Scottish Cup in 2014. There was a spell he was being touted for jobs in Scotland, jobs in England. He didn't get any of the jobs, and then he ends up departing from St Johnson and has never been as high profile again. Callum got the job, won two cups, didn't get a job elsewhere, and of course leaves the post last night.
Well, St Johnson fans, maybe one we can explore as the week goes on. Down the bottom then, if St Johnson are one of the losers at the moment, clearly Dundee United one of the winners. How big a result was that at Fir Park against a Motherwell team that's been flying?
It's been a fantastic week for Dundee United. You know, you think that last minute penalty by Jamie McGrath to see off Hibs on the Sunday afternoon at Tannadice, and then go to Motherwell, as you say, flying. They lose the first goal to Kevin Van Veen. They should have, you know, had it
top
not
scoring
been,
Dutchman in world
yeah,
football.
Yeah, had it not been for a VAR offside decision, they'd have been two down. But they hung in there. They got the goals. They have got the momentum. They're now at home to Livingston on Saturday. They believe they can win that game as well. And, you know, I talk about Hibs in the past sleepwalking into danger, St Johnson sleepwalking into danger. United are wide awake, and they're the ones who are going into the post-split fixtures with all the momentum behind them.
Liam Kelly brought down Stephen Fletcher twice. One was awarded a penalty, which Dundee United won the game from. The other one saw Stephen Fletcher booked for diving. Were they both the same? Should they both have been penalties? And
yes.
Liam Kelly sent off. Should neither of them been penalties?
Both penalties for me. And, you know, when you see the second one, I don't really see that. I thought it were both penalties, and Liam Kelly could have been sent off.
Interesting, Kenny. Ref obviously saw something different in them.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Well, obviously, yeah. And again, when VAR don't intervene and stick by the decisions, they suggest that it doesn't always suggest
for
it's the
clear
right
and obvious thing.
For
yeah,
the clear and obvious thing. I definitely think there was contact on it. I don't think Liam makes the contact. I think the contact's initiated by the movement he makes and then Stephen Fletcher's forward momentum. So soft, yep. Maybe it's one of them. I'll give that, and I'll not give that one, because they are very,
it's harder
very
to give two.
Absolutely. So it's it could be viewed as harsh on Liam and Motherwell, or maybe they deserved another one as well.
We're running out of time quickly. I saw Dermot Gallagher on Sky Sports News today saying Aberdeen will lose their deposit for the appeal on Graham Shinney's red card on Friday night.
I actually agree with him. Nowadays, you know, there are challenges you could make pre-VAR and get away with. There are challenges you make post-VAR that you will be punished for. It's in the wording. You're very good, Gordon, with the wording of these rules endangering an opponent. I think as soon as you see it again on the TV And as soon as the VAR directs you and Anderson to the little screen at the side of the pitch at Dingwall, you know Graham Shinney's in trouble. Incredible. Never sent off in his career.
Twice in a row.
And then twice in two games.
But yeah, you're going to tell us, Kenny, as a pro, you don't think there's much Graham Shinney can do. Because I actually get that as well. But then also think of, could you convince an appeals panel that you hadn't endangered the opponent? That's the difficulty, isn't it?
Well, because the whereabouts, the follow through and the connection kind of up the shin, that you can, I get it, you know, but I don't know what Graham Shinney's supposed to do with his foot. Is it to retract on contact to the ball? That's not going to happen, ever. So if we're going to look at it, I don't think it is a red card. I don't. So that's, and you've seen other instances where the same thing, and the rules applied. I think that's pretty straightforward, actually. The wording of the rules pretty straightforward in that. So to the letter of the law, probably is. Yeah. I don't think
as
it
a,
should be.
As a player, I get that. All right, we're nearly there. Well, we are there, in fact. Thank you to Roger and Kenny. Thank you for listening, for all your calls. It was a busy weekend, and who knows what midweek will throw up. It's getting to that interesting time of the season. So we will be back tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, with Gordon DL and Mark Wilson. Make sure you join us then, and already before you know it, we'll be building up to the last set of pre-split fixtures. Then you know what it means, on to the Scottish Cup semi-finals. It'll be Player of the Year season soon as well, so there is a lot to look forward to. Make sure you join us at 6 tomorrow, and Callum Gallagher is up next.